Welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Boone. You can find me on the web at www.athletebydesign.com. Be sure and follow me on Twitter at Athlete by Design. And we are in part six. I cannot believe it. We're in part six of the current series, Understanding the ADHD Brain in Sports Performance. And in part five, in case you missed it, go back. You can look at the show notes on the website where we talked about emotional management. But I'm joined here with my good friend and really leading expert in ADHD, Dr. Ari Tuckman. How are you, Dr. Tuckman?
I am good. How are you?
Man, I am rocking and rolling. And I'm excited here about the content for this episode, because this really isn't a term I think that is commonly used, but one that makes a lot of sense. And that's self-activation. So let's just kind of jump right in and maybe have you unpack this whole idea of what is self-activation and why is it important?
So self-activation, it's the ability to get ourselves up and moving on something in the absence of external pressure. So doing something at the last minute when the pressure is on, or doing something because somebody's kind of standing behind yelling at you, that's not really self-activation. That's other activation. Self-activation is making yourself get up and going. So, it's one of those things that when you're a little kid, you don't have a whole lot of self-activation. As you become an adult, hopefully you have much more self-activation and therefore have many fewer other adults telling you what to do. So it's a it's a skill that develops over time, and it involves time. That, you know, self-activation involves looking down the road into the future, thinking about future consequences for current actions or inactions, and then using the future to guide our choices in the moment. So it's not just responding to what's most interesting right in front of you, but it's thinking about the bigger picture.
Right. Now, let me kind of give a practical example of a conversation that actually happened last week with a colleague of mine who's a well-known coach within his field. And we were talking about creativity, and he is diagnosed with ADHD, and he feels like that, doesn't understand why, but he strongly feels that when he waits to the last minute, that's when he can be most creative. That if he tries to plan ahead and purposely give time, then he cannot be as creative either in his talks or his program design, or no matter what it is, that for whatever reason, you know, in his words, that he has to have that last minute pressure. But the back end of that, and what I hear you saying, and when I look here in this chapter in your book, when you talk about self-activation, one of the weaknesses tends to be procrastination. And so I kind of hear him sometimes, really, he's describing procrastination. But, you know, what would you say to those athletes and those coaches that say, I show up best and perform best only when it's last minute?
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the hallmark symptoms of ADHD is procrastination, that either they tend to wait to the last minute to even get started, or if they do start ahead of time, it's more of a kind of puttering, tinkering. You know, they're kind of doing something or other, but they're not really, like, their brain isn't lit up and doing its magic, you know? So they're just kind of, you know, slogging through. Whereas the pressure of the last minute kind of activates them and gets them going. Now, so procrastination and self-activation are totally related, because if you're not good at self-activating ahead of time, what it means then is that you're much more dependent on the pressure of the last minute in order to get yourself going. And it's the pressure of the last minute that's the procrastination, that, you know, if you can't do it before, you got to do it at the end, so you wind up procrastinating on it. You know, certainly there are lots of athletes who feel like, you know, when it's in the game and the pressure's on, that's when they do their best. Or musicians who feel like, you know, when it's in front of a crowd, they give their best performance, or speakers who do their best performance in front of a crowd. So, you know, definitely there's something about being in the heat of the moment that makes everybody probably do better, as long as you don't go over the top and get psyched out by it. so that adrenaline definitely can bring the best out of all of us. But the question is, for some folks, ADHD among them, for some folks, they're more dependent on that big heat of the moment, and they're less able to just sort of chug through it when it isn't, you know, like last 10 seconds of the big game.
And you know, what about then the back end, the labels that come with that, such as irresponsibility?
Yeah, that's you know, people who procrastinate are often labeled as being irresponsible, which is, you know, I mean, there's a value judgment in that. It's not merely like an observation. Oh, you tend to do things at the last minute. There's a judgment that is added into the mix when the word irresponsible is used. And the reason I think why irresponsible is used is because, you know, kind of like I said, adults tend to be better at this, at self-activating and getting going earlier and working before playing. And kids tend to be not as good. And, you know, teenagers are kind of somewhere in between, and young adults are hopefully a little bit better than the teenagers. So if in this way, if you're behaving like somebody sort of younger than you, people are going to label that as being irresponsible.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, I know that you have a favorite saying that goes, the neurological drives the psychological. So maybe unpack that statement for us.
So, you know, we all have a certain amount of self-activation. Some people get going very early on things. And, you know, let's be honest, some people get going too early. You know, like they're fretting about stuff that's 10 years down the road. So that, like, there's a point where that, where more isn't better. But, you know, but beyond that, for the folks who are less good at self-activating, because of neurological reasons, in terms of, you know, their ability to look out into time, to use time and future consequences to guide their actions in the present, some people are just not as strong at that. And but from that comes the experiences in their life. And it's not something that happens once or twice, but this is something that happens repeatedly over the years, that they get going at the last minute and they're labeled by parents and teachers and coaches and friends and teammates and everybody else as being kind of irresponsible, or they get grief for it. You know, you're messing us up here. Why didn't you get this done before? Or we're all waiting for you. Why are you so selfish that you didn't do this, you know, when we weren't standing here? And then you start to get into the psychology. So they begin to see themselves as irresponsible, or as a screw up, or as unreliable, or immature, or, you know, all this stuff that they've been told. You know, that mindset isn't one that's going to bring your best performance. That's not a mindset that's going to bring your best abilities into a situation. So what starts out as purely neurological then over time and through experience becomes much more about psychology and mindset. And then you don't even try. And then it really is a mess.
Right. And that's, that kind of results in pessimism almost comes to mind, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And at that point, you should be pessimistic, you know, like, not to be too tongue in cheek here. But, you know, if you're not pessimistic, then you're not, you haven't been paying attention, because your track record says these things tend to not work out. Don't get your hopes up. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like there's a certain, sadly, there is indeed a certain logic to it. But, you know, my position would be, although thus far that pessimism is warranted, it doesn't have to be. Like, you know, it is possible by addressing your ADHD, by understanding it a little bit differently, by being willing to take a chance on the mindset and approach things in a different way. You know, if you approach things in a different way, it then becomes perhaps reasonable to expect a different outcome. Whereas if you're just going to do the same darn stuff that got you in trouble the first 1,000 times, you know, 1,001 isn't the magic number where all of a sudden now the same thing becomes different. So it's being willing to try some new things and being willing to take a chance and being willing to be disappointed perhaps if it doesn't work out, but you know, that's the only way that things get better, because doing the same thing obviously leads to the same outcomes.
Right, right. So what might be a couple of strategies that coaches listening that might have been diagnosed with ADHD or have athletes that they work with, you know, that they can use to kind of get started, you know, self-started, self-activation, a lot of S words there.
Yeah. You know, a couple of the big ones. One of them is shorten down the time between action and consequence. So, you know, much more immediate sort of feedback, whether it's for yourself or for somebody else. You know, so it isn't this thing of like, you know, let's see how the guys do. And then, you know, based on how they do, a week from now, I'm going to pick who's going to be in the starting lineup. Because a week from now, depending on the person, depending on their age, you know, a week from now might as well be a year from now. And it's only like the day before that they're like, ooh, you know, coach is picking lineup. I better get there early today or something. So, you know, provide much more immediate feedback, particularly for the folks who need that more immediate feedback. Related to that, it's much more motivating to work towards a positive rather than to work away from a negative, or to work towards a reward rather than away from a punishment. So if you're one of those coaches who cracks the whip a lot, which, you know, there is a place for that. But if you're cracking the whip and not offering enough compliments, you're not going to get the best out of your team, and especially these athletes. You know, so to give that positive feedback when they do wind up doing things well. And you know what? Some athletes need more of that complimenting than others do. So, you know, you got to read your team and figure out what each athlete needs.
Right. And is there kind of a magic trick, for the sake of a better term, in trying to identify rewards that motivate? Because, you know, there have been times when I've been working with athletes, you know, and we're in the middle of a really hard training phase. And, you know, and I like to reward effort more than outcome many times. But,
yeah,
you know, occasionally I'll end up working with athletes who are not very tangible. They don't chase after the carrot and the stick. They're not going after, if they're working hard, they complete or reach a PR, that they're going to go reward themselves and get a new pair of running shoes, or I'm going to go get a new soccer ball, or, you know what I mean? Something that actually then helps them train even more efficiently. They're not into the tangible rewards. And so, I mean, any kind of tips around that?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a good point, because people are motivated by all sorts of different things, and what motivates one may not motivate another. So, you know, I think the lesson in that is that we shouldn't make assumptions of what's going to motivate everybody on the team, because there is no one thing that will motivate all of them. You know, so you don't make assumptions, you start making some guesses. And then when you're stuck, you just ask, you know, what's motivating to you here? Why do you come and work hard at this? You know, what is the reward for this effort? And it just asks them directly. You know, the ones where it's very tangible stuff, you know, like, I don't know, if they hit a PR, they'll allow themselves to go out buy a new pair of sneaks or something. Like, those folks are kind of easy, you know, because that's a very direct sort of thing. It's the other ones where it's less tangible, like you're saying, they might be a little bit harder in some ways to motivate, because you can't just sort of bust out a new pair of sneakers and be done with it.
Right.
You know, so you need to ask them. And for some people, it's just, I don't know, like, it's the love of the game, or it's the love of being part of a team, being part of, you know, a group of people who are working hard and doing something worthwhile. For some, it's the admiration of people in the stands or their teammates or the coach, you know, or I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different kind of intangible motivators. So you need to find out what's important to them, and then find out how to tie their actions, or the actions that you want out of them, to these, you know, to these less tangible motivators. So really make it clear that doing A, B, and C is going to make it more likely that thing that you're looking for is actually going to happen.
Yeah, and I tell you, to add to that, one life rule that I've found to always be true, and that's a, to use the word always is a pretty big statement, but just from human nature, recognition sometimes goes a long way and can be a great reward in and of itself.
Absolutely.
Everybody likes to be recognized and felt valued, and so for coaches listening, if you have athletes, that kind of struggle with this, think about that too. Definitely good insight. Now, I have a question that I'm just want to throw out there, because we're all talking about self-activation and procrastination and, kind of waiting to the last minute and performing under pressure. I've got one emailer from a coach emailed a question that does ADHD medication help improve, this desire to wait until the last minute? Or is that what we're talking about, self-activation, really just a skill set? So medicine is not really going to address that.
Now, that's some good news here, is medication absolutely should make it easier to kind of get over the hump and start doing it. And not only easier to start it, but easier to stay with it, to work on it longer before taking a break, to be less vulnerable to distractions and disruptions and things like that. I think it's also worth pointing out that self-activation applies mostly to tasks that are less enjoyable or that don't have an immediate reward or punishment. So it doesn't take a lot of work to do the stuff that we really love to do. You don't have to make yourself do the things that you love to do. So really, this only applies to the things that you're not really feeling that psyched about doing at the moment. So, kind of the classic example is the dad who says, "Oh yeah, my kid can play video games for, 15 hours at a shot, but I can't get, 5 minutes of math problems out of him." Well, of course, the video game's exciting and interesting. You don't have to bribe him to do video games, but it's the self-activation comes in when it's something that's not immediately interesting.
Gotcha. So kind of last big question as we wrap up this episode. So if I'm on a coaching staff and I am working with a coach who is struggling with the self-activation piece, is there any suggestion that you could give, to a guy like me to help support and encourage that without, that the coach feeling like that he's being attacked?
Sure. Yeah, I think what I would do is work with him, and this isn't going to be a 10-second process, but work with him to take the season as a whole, or whatever kind of period of time we're talking about, some longer period of time, but take the season as a whole, let's say, and chop it down into much smaller pieces. Because, a season which is 3 months or 9 months or whatever, if you add in the preseason, everything else, like that's a really long period of time. And it's hard to mentally manage that much time in your head at one time. So, what's helpful is to kind of break it down and say, all right, let's figure it out. Here we are on May 15th. Where do you need? So, if you need to be at this point, if the team needs to be at this point by September 1st, where do you need to be by August 1st? Where July 1st, by June 1st? Okay, we've got that. Now let's break it down even further. Let's break it down even further and to make more kind of shorter periods of time. So, in other words, instead of one giant deadline of September 1st, we're going to break it down to a whole bunch of mini deadlines, each week or something. And to really figure out kind of what's supposed to happen week by week. And then from week by week, maybe you go day by day or something. So it's a shorter period of time.
Yeah, I like that, bite-sized chunks. Yeah, the real world example that comes to mind is a good friend and colleague of mine who kind of heads up a one of the larger competitive soccer clubs in the Southeast, and he's the DOC, the Director of Coaching. And coming up in this summer is when a lot of the big tournaments will happen. In the spring and in the summer, and tryouts are coming up as well. And for him, he just looks at their tournament, which is their largest revenue maker, as one big, big sky, viewpoint, right?
Right.
And then what will happen is the week of the turn leading up to the tournament, if the tournament starts on a Friday and they have, say, 150, 200 teams coming in, on that Tuesday, their coaches meeting, he all of a sudden comes up with these brilliant hospitality ideas,
right,
how to connect and keep parents happy, put up a college tent, you know, just do things that, and then as great as those ideas are, the staff just gets pissed off because, you know, they're like, we can't do this now. And so, you know, it's an interesting scenario because the ideas, if they can be implemented, would take the experience of the participants up tenfold without a doubt, but it's just too late.
Yeah.
And so, so I like your example of planning in bite-sized chunks. And so scenarios like the one I just mentioned doesn't tend to bite a staff in the behind.
Well, you know, it's a great example because, you know, especially if this is a tournament that happens every year. So that's the good news. Just like, you know, every year has a new season. But overall, let's face it, every season's kind of structured like the one before. You know, it's sort of like give or take. It's kind of the same thing. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single year. You can build on what happened last year. And what I would advise this guy is take those awesome ideas, throw them at your staff, give them permission to say, this will be a disaster if we start this now. We're not doing it. Awesome idea, wrong time, write it on a piece of paper. And afterwards, we're going to talk about all these awesome ideas that we came up with at the last minute. And we're going to talk about where we need to start planning them next year. So it's too bad we can't have them this year, and that's disappointing, but we can have them next year. And if you have faith that it'll actually happen next year, it might be a little bit easier to let those brilliant ideas go today. And then, you know, to create kind of a, I don't know, not necessarily a notebook, but have some sort of a timeline of, you know, what happens when. So T minus 6 months, this is happening. T minus 3 months, T minus a month. And to have, you know, to put these stuff into the timeline so that you can work it through, you know, step by step. Same thing for a season, you know, starting with your preseason, to start adding that stuff into your timeline so that you don't have to reinvent every year. It's kind of like, you know, when you get married, they have those books where they have the, like, you know, 1 year out, book your venue,
right.
10 months out, book right. your band, blah, blah. It's like, which is great because not that you're chained to that timeline, but then you're not, you know, reinventing the wheel as if you're, you know, every day is a new day and you have no memory of anything that's ever happened before. And with those shorter periods of time then within the timeline, it's much easier than to self-activate and get it done. And if you can look at the timeline and everything else that needs to be done, then hopefully that breaks some of that temptation to say, well, we got 6 months. I don't really feel like doing this now. We can do this later.
Yeah, I like that. That's great suggestions. And you know, the one I have my friend and colleague doing, it's tough. It's, you know, he's had to have some accountability to kind of, you know, put the guardrails there, but it's worked, is to create a notebook, like you said, and that's what I had him start doing. But the title of the notebook is Best Practices.
Yeah.
And so that's just been a great way to, because that's a phrase that triggers his mind because that feels novel and new and innovative when he hears that phrase. So when it's his own work and he can go back and go, okay, under the note tab in my three-ring binder of events and tournaments, you know, here are my top 10 suggestions for best practices. And then, so, you know, those, you know, that's worked out really, really well. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, this has been just rock and roll. And I love our time together. And, you know, for those listening, I would just encourage, as I have every single episode, that whether, you know, you yourself have been diagnosed with ADHD, you have a fellow colleague, a fellow coaching friend, or an athlete that you work with, you need to get this workbook. Understand your brain. Get more done. And it's a lot of the stuff that we've talked about, but it's just the workbook goes into a lot more detail. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Tuckman, but where you can get it, and I'll put a link in the podcast notes as I do every episode, www.addwarehouse.com.
Yep, or and everywhere else, you know, it's all the usual places.
Oh, even better. Hey, I like that. That's awesome. Well, listen, I appreciate, you know, your time. And when we wrap up episode 7 next time, so for the listeners now, I want you to know we've got one more episode in this series. And Dr. Tuckman and I will really do two main things. Number one, we're going to answer some of the questions that many of you have emailed in, or some of you just tweeted me, actually. So if you have any more, do so now before Dr. Tuckman and I finish our final, record our last conversation here next week. But number two, which we're actually going to start the episode with, is I'm going to pick your brain, Dr. Tuckman, on what happens if you are the spouse of a coach and you have to live with a coach who has ADHD,
right?
Or you're the mom or the dad of an athlete who has ADHD. And so we're going to pick your brain to see if you have 3 to 5, you know, I don't want to call them survival strategies because that's got a negative connotation, but we'll have some fun unpacking some of that. So thank you for your time as always, and we'll see you back at episode 7.
Awesome. Sounds good.